Good day and welcome, everyone. This is Molly Rowan Leach, and I am going to be your host today for this very special hour-long session with Grandmother Mona Palaka on justice as healing. And as you know, this is a part and parcel of the ongoing connection series, which is hosted by Restorative Justice on the Rise with big partners from all over the world, including the National Association for Community and Restorative Justice, with a convening upcoming in Denver, Colorado in June of 2019, as well as a special thanks to Shari Garn and The Circle Way for their significant support of this series. So all of our partners from all over the world are equally important to the success of getting this series up and running for you, and we hope that you will find it to be something that's generative of inspiration, of deepening your own practices, of connecting with like-minded and like-hearted people from all over the world. So once again, a warm welcome to everyone who's with us either via webcast or in the telephone virtual conference room with us today. Before I go into sharing a bit about Grandmother Mona and then welcoming her in to just be the wonderful presence that she is around this concept of justice as healing, I'd like to just share that we are just absolutely delighted to have so many people from all over the world with us for the Connection Series. And as you may or may not have been a part of virtual rooms like this for webinars, just remember that you're an equal part of the conversation. And today we're going to open up for questions. And in order to do that, there's a couple methods you can use. One, you could go to the webcast and submit a Q&A question on that tab. We monitor the dashboard all throughout our call for incoming questions, so please get involved. Questions, comments, reflections. And if you'd like to ask your question live with Grandmother Mona today, please press star 2 on your keypad. For more information about your host, which is Restorative Justice on the Rise, you can go to restorativejusticeontherise.org. There you will discover over 150 dialogues from the last 8 years with people such as Grandmother Mona, James O'Dea, Dominic Barter, Dr. Johann Galtung, international peace builders and community builders that are free of charge and do not have a paywall. They are at iTunes and also available on RSS feed. So today's session with Grandmother Mona is just so very special, and I'm so happy that we were able to bring her in without any glitches today. So she's definitely here with us, and thank you to everyone for your patience for this reschedule. Grandmother Mona is a Hopi Havasupi Tewa elder, and she has a Master of Social Work and has recently been chosen as a member of the World Council of Religious and Spiritual Leaders due to her international justice work. She has worked on issues of indigenous peoples, especially related to the right to water, social and health issues, including the elderly native peoples. Mona serves on several United Nations committees on indigenous peoples' issues and is a featured author, speaker, and educator on indigenous peoples' human rights, aging, mental health, addiction, and violence. She is also the president and CEO and faculty of the Turtle Island Project, a nonprofit program that promotes a vision of wellness by providing transcultural training to individuals, families, and healthcare professionals. Grandmother Mona is a member of a very special group of grandmothers that many of you probably have heard of, the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, For more information about the Grandmothers Council, you can surf to grandmotherscouncil.org. And one of the things that the grandmothers are doing in the upcoming months, in March specifically, is a World Water Day, and that is going to be held in Arizona, and it is a public event that you are warmly invited to. So for more information about the Council of Grandmothers and World Water Day, please visit that website, and you can also find them on Facebook. The 13 Indigenous Grandmothers do have a Facebook page. Don't you love technology? So without further ado, of course, thank you so much, Grandmother Mona, for being present with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Molly, and I'd just like to greet each and every one of you that are here on the call and just take a moment to acknowledge this beautiful, wonderful time and moment and to give thanks to the good Creator for blessing us with this day, blessing us with the water, the air, the fire, and the earth, all of these sacred foundations of life that we all rely on in order to have life in this world, and asking for blessings for each and every one of us. So as we bring our minds together, our thoughts and our feelings together in unity with the restorative justice topic on healing, and also to send blessings out to all of our loved ones, our relatives, wherever they may be, whatever they're doing, as well as all of the divine creations that we share life within this world, the plant life, the animal life, the four-legged, the winged, and the water life. All these creations that make our life beautiful in this world. And so just want to acknowledge this day that way and acknowledge each and every one of you who are joining us and during this time to share with one another, and that the things that we're going to share are going to be a benefit to each and every one of us, as well as our loved ones and other people who we may apply these teachings to. And so I give thanks that way, and blessings for the series that's going to continue on here. Restorative Justice Rising, and all of the other presenters and that will be offering their skills, knowledge, and wisdom to those who will join us as participants. So these are the kind of thoughts and feelings I have for us, offering this as a prayer for all my relations. So I'd just like to greet each and every one of you. I'm grateful to be a part of this series, and just introduce myself. My maternal bloodline is from the Havasupai people. Who are the people who live at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And Havasupai means the people of the blue water. And so I'm from the water clan. And on my father's side, I'm Hopi and Tewa. And so my paternal grandmother is Hopi. And through her, I'm from the Sun Clan. And my paternal grandfather is Tewa. And so through him, I'm from the Tobacco Clan. And so that's my tribal lineage. And so many of the teachings that I have and that I share are through my upbringing, through the teachings that I've been given throughout my lifetime. And so I want to acknowledge and honor my ancestry that way. And then here, in my membership with the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, we are a alliance of Indigenous grandmothers from throughout the world who have come together, and with the intention to share our cultural and spiritual teachings to improve relationships with all people around the world. And our primary mission is to promote peace and goodwill, and promote the concept that we are all related. And through that concept of we are all related, it not only means that we are related as human beings, but we are also related to all of the other forms that we share this life with here on Mother. And we also are very concerned and are promoting protection of our earth-based medicines as well as our spiritual practices and beliefs. And so we've been together since 2004, and we've traveled throughout the world and have conducted ceremonies and prayer ceremonies throughout the world in promotion of this mission. And many times we're faced with, situations where there is this.
We can continue. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yes, we're the grandmothers have been doing this work, and in our travels, where we go to wherever we go in throughout the world, the people come to us and they share with us their concerns, and their concerns many times are related to justice, or even to relationships within their communities, relationships, intergenerational relationships, as well as, and how are, they're seeking ways to address these issues, and to, as well as to through finding a process for the people to be able to have good communication and to be able to share with one another a deeper understanding of having good relationships, as well as how to address the concerns they may have about certain situations that may arise, or situations involving possible, wrongs that have been done within the community towards some of the community members. And so the grandmothers have been addressing this and, taking a look at it, as well as talking with the communities about restorative justice. And so part of our in part of that work, not only are we conduct like talking circles, we conduct ways of having traditional dialogue within the community or within the groups of the people who are experiencing these issues to have communication and to talk among each other about it. And then after that process occurs, then we move into the healing portion, which is where there's a blessing that's done with the parties that are involved in this. And many times it's the whole community that that participates, which is very important because it recognizes, you know, that participation shows that to the people within the community themselves recognize that although they may not be the primary, you know, person experiencing a situation, they are affected, you know, at another level. And so participating in the healing, or we call it blessing, the blessing circle, by participating in that, then it helps the whole community to come to a better understanding among themselves, and also to bear witness to the process, not only to participate, but also to bear witness to the process that it's been accepted by the community of acknowledging and talking about whatever the concern is. And this could be sometimes we're dealing with things. Sometimes we're dealing with things like suicide. We're dealing with things like elder abuse. We're dealing with things that have to do with, you know, dealing with things that have to do with sometimes child neglect or child abuse. Sometimes we're dealing with, you know, violence, interpersonal violence among, you know, men and women. And so in this process, it's acknowledged and there, also it gives, the people an opportunity to, express their thoughts and their feelings. So those are some of the things that the grandmothers have been doing in our work, in regard to restorative justice. And sometimes I know in my own community work, my work that I do as a community social worker, oftentimes I conduct group sessions with, you know, for domestic violence, I conduct group sessions with the men to have them also explore what their own thoughts and feelings are, as well as, you know, looking at what are the traditional ways within that community, the Native traditional teachings about how to have good interpersonal relationships. And so those are some of the things that we've been doing and with the through the grandmother's work as well as my own work in community as a community organizer. So I'll go ahead and let, if there's questions or you want me to discuss it more, I'm open to that.
Mm. Thank you, Mona. And just a reminder to everyone present, there's two ways to submit comments or questions. One is to simply raise your hand in our virtual space here by pressing star 2 if you'd like to ask a live question. Secondly, if you're on the webcast where you can see right now the slide of Grandmother Mona, you can go to the Q&A tab and put your Q&A comment, question, insight in there as well. Throughout each of these larger group sessions, we'll always be wanting to keep you a part of the conversation and included. So feel warmly welcomed to follow suit if you so wish. And in the meantime, Grandmother Mona, I'd love to ask a question that kind of links into what people are experiencing so far in their smaller group sessions with some of our guides this week. And that's the question of, justice as healing ourselves, and how does that start? Like how can we see justice as something that begins from our inner world, and how we perhaps what might be called self-regulation or self-awareness and self-care? How do you see it, Grandmother Mona?
Well, one of the things that, you know, I had to do at one point was I was going to be talking with elders and talking with them and about their, you know, about their concerns. And the first thing I had to do was before I went to meet with them was I had to work within myself and resolve within myself my own feelings and my own, you know, sense of how, you know, what are some of the ways, what are some of the things that I, you know, hold that could, possibly even block me from being a being completely present with the people I'm going to be working with, and so what I did privately was I went and I lit a candle. And I got a glass of water, and I sat down with it and looked into the candle and thought as well as expressed my feelings and my concerns and how I or even, you know, situations I had been either that I was either familiar with or situations I had experienced that I, you know, where I could gain some sense of balance of how these kinds of situations are could be teachers. And I came to that because that was what an elder had told me, was that, you know, when you have these experiences and they may be very negative experiences in your life, what you're doing is a process, you know, of, you know, what did you see? What did you hear? What did you think? And how did you feel? And so going through that process, expressing it, helped to, you know, bring it out from myself and put it out in front of me. And from that, he told me, when you do that process, what happens is you learn. You learn something from that. But it has to be that complete process. All of those areas you must reflect on in order to get to a point where you can have some sense of balance with it. And so that's the way that I work through these kinds of situations and to develop a sense of understanding and a sense of being well with it. So that's how I, that's the process I use.
Thank you. And I know that you opened today's hour with a very special blessing that I noticed for myself. My energy simply shifted. And the energy of thanksgiving and giving thanks very specifically seems to do that. And I'm wondering if you might be willing to share a little bit more about how giving thanks plays into setting space for how we do justice together. Would you talk about that a bit? I'm so sorry you have a cold.
Well, I think that, one of the things, this is basically the way I was taught, in my everyday life growing up is, when you first wake up, you look at this as a great opportunity and you have a sense of gratitude, this attitude of gratitude about everything that's in front of you. To begin with that kind of way of being and to have gratitude. And first of all, we say, have gratitude for your sacred foundations of life, which is, the water, the air, the fire, and the earth. To have gratitude for those things that give you life and begin there. And then knowing and understanding that you have basically a clean slate to begin with. And to possibly reflect on what this new time, this new day has in store for you. And so the practice is to go forward with that attitude of gratitude.
It seems like it helps to also have a practice that is, like you were saying, right as you wake up in the morning. That's the first thing without another thought for many people to have that thanksgiving. And again, very specifically towards the waters, towards the stone people, the standing ones, the winged ones, and so forth. And it just seems to have, again, like I was sharing a moment ago, when I hear you open with such a deep thanksgiving process, there's something that it does, I think, to our neurophysiology. And it might have something also to do with what our colleague James O.D. Loves to share in regards to the Earth's resonance, which is the Schumann resonance, which is an actual hertz of, I think, 8.3 or 7.8 or something like that.
Oh.
And it actually links. When we're in gratitude, we are resonating at that same hertz as the Earth herself.
Yeah,
I just find that very fascinating.
Oh yeah.
So just thank you for your sharing. I wonder if you might be willing to go a little bit more specifically into what you and your fellow group of 13 grandmothers might be doing in your own communities. I know you shared a bit about what you do around practices, circles. What are you seeing in the world right now with the grandmothers, particular when conflict inevitably arises? What's happening that is pointing towards healing for them? And how does it work?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that many of the grandmothers within their own communities are involved in is, again, going back to the preservation of the culture, the cultural and spiritual practices and beliefs within their communities. And one of the things that we feel is so important is to have a sense of connectedness, to have that sense of connectedness to your home, to where you live, to the history of your people or your community or even your family. And to look at that and to have a sense of being connected, being having a relationship, you know, with all of where you're from. And that not only means you know, the people who live there, but also if the, you know, the rivers, the lakes, the streams that are there, the mountains, or sacred sites, places that have value and meaning to the people, and calling it as being sacred. Calling it as being, you know, important to, you know, the history of the people, including historical sites where there were certain events that may have taken place that are important to you know, honor. And to preserve. And so that's some of the work that the grandmothers are doing within their own communities. One of the our Lakota grandmother Unchi Rita is involved with a elders group there in Pine Ridge, the Oglala Lakota, and one of the things they did was they had a seat exchange with her people, the Lakota, the Oglala, and with the Yankton Lakota, and so and in that exchange there was more. There's more that happens than simply having a seed exchange. there's sharing of, you know, the stories, the sharing of you know, how the, there's a story that how the seeds came to the people. And, you know, and so that by doing that, it enriches a person's, the person's connectedness beyond, you know, knowing who your neighbor is, but it's deeper than that. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's also, goes, is connected to the cultural and historical practices of the people, which then, you know, gives a person a sense of, you know, knowing who they are and their story, their history, you know, their connectedness to one another. And that, you know, we, again, going back to, we are all related. And so, you know, these kind of, so those are some of, you know, some of the things that the grandmothers have been doing.
Grandmother Mona, how does a certain cultural perspective or worldview inform the way a system is created? And I guess to be more specific, how is it that it appears, and you can certainly share your thought there, it appears that our worldview links to, in some form or another, very directly and eventually into our justice system. And I'm thinking, of course, about the what we might term the Western worldview, at least the current one, that seems to be dominant with white people,
mm-hmm.
And how we have conditioning around punitive, you know, systems, and also conditioning around disconnection. Could you share with us your thoughts on worldview and how it plays out into our systems and our individual lives?
Well, I think that there is that system that exists that has been, you know, has been part of our you know, our society, and we know, as you know, we know that the indigenous people, it's not successful, you know, it's not a way that that promotes you know, a person understanding and acknowledging their, you know, acknowledging that there are certain ways of being that they must change, and so we know that it hasn't worked, and so when talking circles were introduced as a way for the indigenous people to process, they found that it's more effective. It gives the person an opportunity to acknowledge and to actually there's an exchange in, there's the exchange that occurs in the circle. And so the people, they again, they're connected to the rest of the people in the circle, but then at the same time, they assume their own responsibility for whatever their action is, not only in what put them there, but also, you know, their own action as a participant, you know, as a, as one who is, you know, who's going to be sharing and expressing themselves truthfully. And so, this has happened now, and that's why, you know, now we have, you know, there's more of a, this process of the circles as part of restorative justice approaches. And one of the things as far as the system is concerned, you know, it there's a, you know, in Western ways, you know, there has to be what they call, oftentimes it's called, you know, either best practices or evidence-based. And I think that, you know, that's one of the barriers that we face in, you know, creating a change that's needed. You know, there, it has to be evidence-based. And so oftentimes, you know, our traditional way of processing, as far as restorative justice is concerned, doesn't fall within the guidelines of what the Western model is. And, but, you know, I see that there is, you know, I've seen many other programs, different programs that are adopting it, which is really good. And it gives, maybe in that there's the process of developing the evidence of it being a best practice.
There are many, many skilled and seasoned practitioners in the field of restorative justice and growing in the United States and, of course, much beyond. And I think New Zealand in particular has played a real role. I know at least here in Colorado, around helping inform how programs could go about building their services. What I've observed, and I would highly recommend for those who haven't seen it, there's a film called Fixing Juvie Justice, which is a PBS documentary that shows very explicitly the process that our New Zealand friends partake in together. And it begins with everyone entering the, I think it's called a Wahnui, the community house, together. So everyone enters, regardless of whether they're the impacted party or the person who caused harm, the families, the elders, they all enter together into this community house. This film depicts it really beautifully. I've never seen it depicted so specifically as in that documentary. It also features Lauren Abramson of the Community Conferencing Center in Baltimore and her and their team, working within, you know, very violent and underserved pockets of that region back east. But I guess what I'd like to ask, and maybe pause just for a moment too, before I ask the question, to pause to ask you, our community here today with us, to please submit your questions, if you have them, or comments using the Q&A tab. We have about 12 minutes left with Grandmother Mona, and we warmly invite you to get involved in the conversation today with whatever's present for you, something that you might like to share with the group, ask of Grandmother Mona, and so forth. So ask it live by pressing star 2 on your keypad. Or, of course, as mentioned, through the Q&A form on the webcast. So Grandmother Mona, you did say a moment ago how promising it is to see restorative justice programs and related programs, peace-building programs, social-emotional learning in schools on the rise in our Western-based systems. And I'm wondering how we can keep from diluting our processes or becoming blended models, so to speak. There's some people that might see that, you know, okay, we have a restorative justice program, and yet we're still acting somewhat punitively in that, you know, this youth still needs to go into the court and report to the judge, and the DA is still involved, and so on and so forth. And, you know, sometimes that's out of necessity. But how as we rise with our restorative justice practices in this country that we're in right now, how can we make sure that we stay on track to really keep it restoratively minded and healing minded as much as possible?
Well, I think that I see it as like building blocks. One of the things that, you know, just from my experience, is that is the you know, the review and evaluation, I guess, part of, you know, of the program. You know, okay, so one of the things that there's certain levels of I guess severity, so it's like, okay, so we don't necessarily completely throw out the judicial piece of it, but that the in the that there be a some sort of a systemic approach to how the restorative justice circles are implemented. They're part of it. They become part of it. But we know that there are some people who are, you know, they may not be successful in it. So there needs to be, I think, there needs to be a some sort of a collaboration where they're working on developing the restorative justice programs that have possibly different levels, you know, just like when you're dealing with, you know, there's the primary, there's the secondary, and then there's the tertiary kind of levels of prevention, and or even treatment. And so it's, I think that there needs to be possibly models that could be developed that will incorporate ways of assessing these programs, so that if there's areas that need to be improved on, then they're more readily identified.
That, I love that, because that points to, we have so many wonderful people serving every day during the week in different pockets of support for our youth and for adults, whether it be addiction, or, you know, hopefully strengthening mental health programs again, so that restorative justice programs I've seen actually here in Colorado are really strongly, to some degree or another, partnering up with youth-based programs, with recovery programs, with different services that are offered for some people who may just not even have enough food to eat. A restorative justice program can become their first gateway into understanding how many community resources there are, you know, maybe to step out of the shame of poverty that is so embedded in our culture, to know that, you know, they have people out there that are behind them and offering food boxes, or willing to hear and really truly listen to them for the first time. So I really appreciate what you're sharing, Grandmother Mona, because it really points back to that piece that I know your presence and your teachings are all about, and that's, we are all related.
Yeah.
So I want to thank Melanie for her wonderful question submitted through the webcast. And she asks, Mona, what are some practices that could help someone in a circle who is having trouble with self-regulation and is having very intense feelings? A wonderful question. Thank you again, Melanie.
Okay, so could you repeat the question?
Sure. She is asking, what are some practices that can help somebody in a circle who is having trouble with self-regulation and is having very intense feelings?
Okay. Sometimes whatever is being used in the circle, the whatever the instrument is, or the object that each person holds, what I would do would be to, you know, give it to the person and ask them to hold it, and to hold it, and to start by touching the earth, to touch the earth, and to touch it to his heart, and touch it to his forehead, his mind, and then just sit and hold it, and to think about the things that are, you know, that are going on within him at this time, and to allow all those things to go into that object, and then to take a deep breath, and if he wants to express himself, say a few words, he can, or if not, go ahead and pass the object on. But that's part of, you know, that's grounding. That's being, you know, being grounded, not with the rest of the people in the circle. Our tendency is to expect people to, you know, to be in communication with the rest of the people in the circle. The thing about the circle is that it's the person becomes grounded within themselves, and that when they're speaking, they're not necessarily speaking to everyone in the circle. Whatever they're saying, they're feeling and hearing whatever it is that they have to say. So by having them go through that experience, then it brings them back within themselves and recognizing that whatever I do and whatever I'm saying, not only am I, you know, not only are the other people observing, you know, they're seeing, hearing, and even having feelings about it, but I too, it's taking ownership for whatever it is that's going on within them. And so, you know, what we say is, you know, I'm not just talking to you, but I'm also talking to myself. And so, or whatever I'm doing, I'm not doing it, you know, to you, but I'm also doing it to myself. And so it's part of that is that teaching of reciprocity of giving and taking. And so when you do that with them to get them grounded, then, you know, it helps them to realize that, you know, that place that they sit in the circle is very important, that they hold a very important spot.
Thank you so much, Grandmother Mona, for your sharing today. And as we move towards wrapping up this hour together, and thank you again, everyone, for being a part of this conversation. If anything begins to come to surface for you around what we've talked about today with Grandmother Mona, and you would like to talk with her further, we certainly, for those who have signed up for small group mentoring sessions, she will be with us again next month on Wednesday, February 13th at the 10 a.m. PST time slot for her first small group mentoring session. So for those of you who are inclined to attend, make sure to go to our website links that we've been sending in email. Those are the links to go directly to the hub site for you as a participant. So before I say any further closing remarks, Grandmother Mona, would you like to share any closing thoughts from today with us?
I just like to say thank you again to each and every one of you for your time, your presence, and wish you all well as you continue on throughout your day, and good blessings to you as we go forward, and looking forward to joining you again next month.
Thank you. It's such an honor, Grandmother Mona, and so much appreciation to the 13 grandmothers and to all that you all share with the world ongoing and tirelessly. For more about the Grandmothers Council, please go to grandmotherscouncil.org. You can also visit their Facebook page. And again, look out for posts and information soon from the Grandmothers Council about World Water Day in March. That will be in Arizona. And in order to connect with Grandmother Mona via email, she has shared the following email, which we'll also send and post to the Hub site page resources. And that's gmc.monap@gmail. That's G as in girl, M as in Mona, C as in cat, .monap@gmail.com. It's been a pleasure, really, truly, and an honor in every sense of the word to be with you today and to be your host for this connection series. We really want it to be generative and supportive for you. So if you have feedback or questions, we warmly welcome them at any time. You all have links and emails to how to get a hold of us via email, so I won't repeat that here. But I just want to also extend very special thanks to the NACRJ, the Circle Way, to the International Institute of Restorative Practices, to Living Justice Press, and to all of our partners who are representing as our wonderful guides throughout this series. Thank you again, Grandmother Mona, and
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so
all.
Much.
For those of you still in the room, one additional reminder about our schedule. Tomorrow we will feature a recording of a wonderful presentation from former Amnesty International Director James O'Dea. That's called Roots and Stars. You can come back to this room by using your schedule that has been posted at the Hub site. That's a PDF or image that you can link directly out of to get access information for all of our events. Again, that's tomorrow at 10 a.m. PST, 1 p.m. EST, United States time zones. Thank you again, everyone, and take good care.